Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Here we go, new year, same old shutdown in Washington, and that's our topic.
And I just want to wish you a very, very happy new year. It's going to be a great year.
Steven Ritson and Pieces.
Steven Ritson and Pieces.
In.
Welcome, Steven Ritson in Pieces.
If you think about it, you know, the free trade agreement that we will have to come to with the European Union should be one of the easiest in human history.
The deal that we're going to make is gonna be a piece of cake. No much to get and such a lot to take.
Liebe Mitbürgerinnen und Mitbürger, ein Jahr liegt hinter uns mit Höhen und Tiefen, mit frohen und traurigen Momenten. Jedem von uns wird dazu etwas ganz Persönliches einfallen. Ich denke heute Abend vor allem an das überaus schwierige politische Jahr.
I will shortly leave the job that it has been the honor of my life to hold. The second female Prime Minister, but certainly not the last. I do so with no ill will, but with enormous and enduring gratitude to have had the opportunity to serve the country I love.
But when you have massively wealthy countries that have very low military costs because the United States subsidizes them, so they take advantage of us on military, they can easily pay us the full amount. And they also take advantage of us on trade. So when I speak up, I mean, that's why I got elected. Issues like that. Issues like the border. And it would be so easy not to do anything. When they say I'm not popular in Europe, I shouldn't be popular in Europe. If I was popular in Europe, I wouldn't be doing my job. Because I want Europe to pay. Germany pays 1%. They should be paying 4%. They're paying 1%. They should be paying even more than that. Other countries pay a small percentage of what they should be paying. So, you know, when I say I'm sorry, folks, you have to pay up. I shouldn't be popular in Europe. They do a poll. I was at 88%, and now I'm at, you know, very low number. In Europe, I don't care about Europe. I'm not elected by Europeans. I'm elected by Americans.
By the way, I've been wondering what that special place in hell looks like for those who promoted Brexit without even a sketch of a plan how to carry it safely.
My first time at Davos, and I find it quite a bewildering experience, to be honest. I mean, 1,500 private jets flown in here to hear Sir David Attenborough speak about, you know, how we're wrecking the planet. And I mean, I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water. I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, we can talk for a very long time about all these stupid philanthropy schemes. We can invite Bono once more, but come on, it's, we gotta be talking about taxes. That's it, taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is bullshit, in my opinion.
I actually came because I do believe we have an issue here. But I have to say, honestly, this is a very one-sided panel. You know, frankly, what people really want, is a dignity of a job. I like the panel to talk about beyond taxes, which every one of you have talked about. The only thing you've talked about in this whole panel on inequality, what can we really do to solve and help solve inequality over time beyond taxes?
Let me tell you something. We talk about jobs, but the quality of those jobs with poultry workers in the richest country in the world, the United States. Dolores, one woman we work with there, told us that she and her co-workers have to wear diapers to work because they are not allowed toilet breaks. This is in the richest country in the world. So don't tell me about low levels of unemployment. You are counting the wrong things. You're not counting dignity of people. You're counting exploited people.
You jumped the bandwagon. You're all like, oh, I'm against a globalist elite, blah, blah, blah. It's not very convincing, to be honest.
Why don't you go f*** yourself, you tiny brain, and I hope this gets picked up. Because you're a moron. I tried to give you a hearing, but you were too annoying to me.
You can't handle the criticism, can you? We got to be talking about taxes. That's it. Taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is bullshit, in my opinion.
I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighter's conference and no one's allowed to speak about water. That's one of the great moments. Maybe the great moment in Davos history. Rutger Bregman is the author of Utopia for Realists, and he joins us now. Mr. Bregman, I can't stop laughing just listening to that. And part of it makes me wonder, are you the first person ever to note are flying private to talk about global warming and that none of them mentioned tax avoidance? Has anyone ever said that before at Davos that you know of?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on Davos history, but it is a bit hypocritical, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And others have noted that. We've noted it on this show. We've just never gone to Davos and said it out loud as you did. So if I was wearing a hat, I would take it off to you. What response did you get?
Well, I mean, they were not very happy with me, but I'm just a random Dutch historian who's basically saying what everyone around the globe is thinking. You know, the vast majority of Americans, for years and years now, according to the polls, including Fox News viewers and including Republicans, are in favor of higher taxes on the rich. You know, higher inheritance taxes, higher top marginal tax rates, higher wealth taxes. It's all really mainstream. But no one's saying that at Davos, just as no one's saying it on Fox News, right? And I think the explanation for that is quite simple, is that most of the people in Davos, but also here on this channel, have been bought by the billionaire class. You know, you're not meant to say these things. So I just went there and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to say it, just as I'm saying it right here on this channel.
Well, what was interesting, I thought, about what you said was you noted something. I mean, many people have called for higher taxes.
Well, not on this channel, is it? I mean, almost all of the pundits on this channel for years have been against higher taxes, right? Even though the vast majority of Americans is in favor of it.
I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting to know how many hours of Fox you've watched, but I'm interested in what you said about tax avoidance. So
yeah.
Just because someone faces a specific tax rate does not mean that person pays that tax rate at all. I don't think Netflix, for example, paid any taxes last year at all. So what would you do specifically to make certain that this class of people pays what they're supposed to pay?
Well, it's about multiple things. So we should really crack down on tax paradises and on tax avoidance. That's a major issue. But it's also about having higher taxes. So in the 1950s, for example, in the 1960s, in the golden age of capitalism, as historians called it, we had top marginal tax rate for the very rich of about, you know, 70, 80, 90%. Actually under Eisenhower, the Republican president. And this was also, you know, one of the best periods in American history. Same is true for the UK and the rest of Europe. So as a historian, for me, it's all not, you know, it's really not rocket science. We should go back to simple and straightforward solutions from the past.
Right, but this country was sustained, and since you're a historian, I guess you would know this, sustained by an industrial economy at the time that was broad and deep. That created a middle class, that doesn't exist anymore. So it's an entirely different economy. I wish it did exist.
Oh, well, but that's not really an issue.
Does the tax rate work the same way with an entirely different economy?
Well, I think it would. I mean, America is still pretty much the most powerful country in the world, right? So if it really would want to, it could easily crack down on tax paradises. But the thing is, I mean, you guys have brought into power a president that doesn't even want to show its own tax returns. I mean, who knows how many billions he has hidden in the Cayman Islands or in Bermuda. So I think the issue really is one of corruption and of people being bribed and of not being, you know, not talking about the real issues. What the family, you know, what the Murdochs basically want you to do is to scapegoat immigrants instead of talking about tax avoidance. So I'm glad you're now finally raising the issue, but that's what been happening for the past couple of years.
And I'm taking orders from the Murdochs, is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, it doesn't work that directly. But I mean, you've been part of the Cato Institute, right? You've been a senior fellow there for years. You've been taking their dirty money. They're funded by Koch billionaires, you know?
Why don't you tell me how it does work?
Well, it works by you taking their dirty money. It's as easy as that. I mean, you are a millionaire funded by billionaires. That's what you are. And I'm glad you now finally jumped the bandwagon, you know, of people like Bernie Sanders and AOC. But you're not part of the solution, Mr. Carlson. You're part of the problem, actually.
But AOC, can I just say?
It's true, right? That all the anchors. All the anchors on Fox, they're all millionaires. How is this possible? Well, it's very easy. You're just not talking about certain things.
Fox doesn't even play where you are.
It doesn't play where you are. Well, have you heard of the internet? I can watch things whatever I want, you know? I have, actually. I can't say I'm a great fan of your show, but I do my homework when you invite me on your show. So, I mean, you're probably not going to air this, but I went to Davos to speak truth to power, and I'm doing exactly the same thing right now. You might not like it, but you're a millionaire funded by billionaires, and that's the reason why you're not talking about these issues.
But I am talking about these issues.
Yeah, only now. Come on, you jumped the bandwagon. You're all like, oh, I'm against the globalist elite, blah, blah, blah. It's not very convincing, to be honest.
Why don't you go f*** yourself, you tiny brain, and I hope this gets picked up, because you're a moron. I tried to give you a hearing, but you were too f***ing annoying for me.
You can't handle the criticism, can you?
There's a war on alternative media. There's a war where they're trying to criminalize political expression. There's a war where they're trying to criminalize free speech.
This is one of New Zealand's darkest days. Clearly, what has happened here is an extraordinary and unprecedented act of violence.
Disbelief in Christchurch, New Zealand. It's March 2019, and a white supremacist has just shot dead 51 people in consecutive attacks at a mosque and an Islamic centre in the city.
When shooting started, it started from the hallway. So I could hear. So, two. And my wife started instructing several ladies and children to get out. Then she was shot.
The rise of white supremacy and right-wing extremism is a great global threat to mankind. And this must end now.
And back home at the White House late today, President Trump, who was mentioned in that gunman's apparent manifesto, said he does not see white nationalism as a rising global threat.
Anti-Semitism or racism or white supremacy, xenophobia, these things always existed. But only now are we in a moment, in a political climate, where people feel emboldened to give voice to these ideas that previously would have been considered taboo, that previously would have been considered unacceptable. And I think when you look through the manifesto,
what do you think is sort of the main issue where you would like Matteo to really act?
I mean, the problem of... I don't know how to say it in English.
The problem of...
Odd people from other countries coming into
migration.
Ours. Yeah, migration.
Immigration.
Yeah. It's a big problem.
A record number of voters across Europe have dealt a blow to traditional centrist politics, with far-right parties making significant gains in the EU Parliament elections.
An increasing number of people seem to think that their lives are being controlled by elites that don't care about them, by huge globalized digital companies, by corrupt politicians, by
journalists. Macron est un dictateur. Je vote le Front National et puis terminé, on va rejoindre l'Italie.
Vive le peuple français! Vive la France!
Prima gli italiani.
Nationalism and fears over immigration fueled gains for populist parties in France, Hungary and Italy, where Matteo Salvini's far-right party won more than 30% of the vote.
And Britain took part in the EU elections. Nigel Farage's new Brexit party came out on top. He says that should send a message that Britain wants to leave Europe now.
Thank you, everybody. And
why don't you resign?
I'm here in the main arrivals hall of the Hong Kong airport, and there's a crowd of people just sitting here. They break into cheers.
Today, Hong Kongers protested in record-breaking numbers, a sea of humanity. Organizers say nearly 2 million marching across the city to voice their anger at their Beijing-backed leader, Carrie Lam, and her controversial bill that would allow suspected criminals to be extradited from Hong Kong to mainland China.
A meeting with North Korea dictator Kim Jong-un at the demilitarized zone that separates North and South Korea. You're looking at live pictures right now from the pool.
Good to see you again. I've never expected to meet you at this place.
He is now the first sitting U.S. president ever to set foot in North Korean territory.
In Hong Kong, protests continue. They've been going.
The tense week in Chile after violent protests.
Bolivia's political unrest turned to death.
By raiding Lebanon for a third
week. Iranians have taken to the streets by
thousands. Across Egypt, calling on President.
Friends against controversies of Ecuador to protest the president.
Now, Algeria has been rocked by.
Across the world, in dozens of countries, protesters have taken to the streets. Demonstrators are united in frustration with economic disparity and unrealized economic expectations.
Stephen Ritson in pieces.
I'm surprised at how badly it's all gone from the standpoint of a negotiation. But I gave the Prime Minister my ideas on how to negotiate it. And I think you would have been successful. She didn't listen to that, and that's fine. I mean, she's got to do what she's got to do, but I think it could have been negotiated in a different manner, frankly. I hate to see it being everything being ripped apart right now. I don't think another vote would be possible because it would be very unfair to the people that won.
think at the minute the whole thing's even more confusing than it has been. That's why all this is going. The whole in and out thing, I think everyone's finding it difficult.
Yep.
In and out is a very hard decision. It's like the other day, my flatmate was making me a peppermint tea, and he said, would you like the bag leaving in? Or taking out? And it's very hard, because if you leave the bag in, and over time, the cup of tea itself as a whole will get stronger. And it might appear like the bag is getting weaker, but it's now part of a stronger cup of tea. Whereas, if you take the bag out, the tea is now quite weak, and the bag itself goes directly in the bin.
Listened to Mr. Farage and his colleagues, and seeing the hubris with which he stands here and the self-gratification of his position, I sometimes wonder, has he gone to Sunderland and talked to the workers at the Nissan plant and said to them, it might cost you your job, but I will get my pipe dream of so-called sovereignty. But it might cost you your job, sorry, but I'll get my pipe dream of so-called sovereignty. Has he done that? Has he gone to Oxford, to the mini plant, and said, I know what BMW are thinking if there's a no-deal Brexit, but I want it so badly, this no-deal Brexit, that really don't care about your job. Has he done that? That would have been the honest thing to do, I suppose. Has Dr. Liam Fox, has Dr. Liam Fox ever said, well, I said it would be the easiest trade deal in human history, but on second thought, it's much more complicated than I promised before the referendum. Has Boris Johnson gone to the doctors and nurses of the NHS and said, I did promise you 350 million extra pounds a week, but sorry, I can't deliver on that promise. Have they done that? I think, frankly, that we would need, if we want to come out of this situation, a bit more modesty and honesty on all sides. I also believe... I just refer to a report by the UK government, published in November last year, where it said that if there's a no-deal Brexit, this would cost approximately 9.3% economic growth. Are you willing to pay that price? I asked the Brexiteers on this side. Are you willing to pay that price? Are you willing to sacrifice all those jobs for your pipe dream of so-called sovereignty? What is that sovereignty going to bring to you if you live that pipe dream?
Freedom is essential.
Mr. Coburn. Mr. Coburn, excuse me, Vice President Timmermans, please.
Yes, I will.
Can I just say, Mr. Coburn, you and I have a special relationship. I'm special and I don't know what you are, so please don't interrupt. And I know Mrs. Atkinson takes issue with me on occasion. Please listen with respect. You may disagree, but I would urge you to listen and maybe learn.
But I did. Madam President, I did listen to Mr. Coburn, and he says liberty is more important. Then have the courage and go to Sunderland and talk to the workers in the Nissan plant. Talk to the workers in Oxford and in the mini plant and tell them my so-called liberty is more important than your jobs. I have the courage to do that, sir. And then also go to Ireland. and go to a place where since 1998 peace reigns and violence has disappeared, and tell the people there my pipe dream is more important than your peace and quiet. My pipe dream is more important, and I will accept a hard border if that gives me my no deal Brexit. Have that courage. And I always hear one, do you understand, do you know the number 16.1 million? I never hear it mentioned. I always hear 17.4 million. Yes, but 16.1 million are also British citizens who voted to stay. They haven't disappeared. Isn't the essence of European democracy that we also respect the position of minorities in our countries? Isn't the essence of democracy that we try to build bridges and to find solutions that can be carried by the most people in our society? Should that not be the next steps we take in this? And to be very clear, why does the Commission stand so firm for the integrity of the internal market? Why do we simply say, let's have open borders? I give you one example. If for some reason the United Kingdom would decide to have a trade deal with the United States on their terms, and chlorinated chicken would be coming into the United Kingdom, and we would not be able to check that at a European border, then we would not be able to say to European citizens, we can't protect you against something you don't want. We could never do that. That's why we have always to protect the integrity of the internal market. And we've been bending over backwards, and we spared no effort. And I do pay tribute to Michel Barnier. We spared no effort to try and reconcile Madame May's red lines and her demands with our firm duty to protect the European Union and the integrity of the internal market. The withdrawal agreement is the best and only possible solution to that dilemma. And I hope this is something that will be well understood. This is a position the Commission defends on your behalf. The vast majority of this Parliament supports this. And we will continue to do that to protect the interests of European citizens, whether they live on the continent or in the United Kingdom. Thank you very much, Madam President.
You know, you're a passionate Remainer, we know that. But I also sense that you wanted to gauge some reaction from some of your followers and some of your listeners as well.
Well, I mean, to me, obviously, it's not going to get past an HR department. But morally, you know, it's like if we were all on an aeroplane and some of us voted to switch the engines off, then, and there's only a limited number of parachutes, then I don't really think they should go to the people who voted to switch the engines off. And likewise, these people who voted Brexit, I mean, the examples that I've got are certain people who own businesses in Manchester. One of them, he warned his workers first. He said, listen, I can't tell you how to vote, but this business relies on our trade with Europe and also the value of the pound. If we leave, it's going to affect how many of you might have jobs in the future. And then he said he was going around his sites and he's hearing blokes going, no, it's just Project Fear. And he said, and he's having sleepless nights and worrying about his business. So he's obviously, he's already got rid of these people first.
So he's actually done this?
Oh, no, yeah, quite a few have done it.
You're not going to tell us who they are, because, of course, you can't.
No.
You can't.
I mean morally.
Sack people.
Morally, because of their it is the right thing to do. And let's face it, that is what they voted for. They said it's going to be short-term pain. So they'll be happy, because in a few weeks' time, they'll get an even better job and it'll be sunlit uplands.
It'll be that Brexit.
And then there was that one guy who said, look, I would rather eat grass than be in the EU. So there you go. There's a whole field of it.
The world has changed. None of us can go back. All we can do is our best. And sometimes the best that we can do is to start over.
Nobody tell me. Nowhere in the world could you find a landscape more ravishing than that. And it's ours to look at and to cherish for the rest of our lives. I would die for it, Clemmy.
I love you, a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck, and a hug around.
I will shortly leave the job that it has been the honour of my life to hold. The second female Prime Minister, but certainly not the last. I do so with no ill will, but with enormous and enduring gratitude to have had the opportunity to serve the country I love.
The Prime Minister's advice to Her Majesty was unlawful, void, and of no effect. This means that the order in council to which it led was also unlawful, void, and of no effect, and should be quashed. This means that when the Royal Commissioners walked into the House of Lords, it was as if they had walked in with a blank sheet of paper.
In this moment of national resolution, I want to speak directly to those who made it possible, and to all those who voted for us for the first time, and those whose pencils may have wavered over the ballot, and who heard the voices of their parents and their grandparents whispering anxiously in their ears. I say thank you for the trust you have placed in us and in me, and we will work round the clock to repay your trust and to deliver on your priorities with a parliament that works for you.
It's a two-way thing, really, because women and children are being killed back in the Islamic State right now. And it's kind of retaliation. Like, their justification was that it was retaliation, so I thought, OK, that is a fair justification.
It is clear that this is one of New Zealand's darkest days. Clearly, what has happened here is an extraordinary and unprecedented act of violence.
There's this guy called Lucas. Lucas pulls off the wall this long stick. He charges towards the bad guy and he impacts him on the chest. The door's opened, out the terrorist falls, and the first one after him is Lucas shouting at everyone to get out of the way, get back. But I tell you what, members of the public, they just don't do that nowadays. They do what they needed to do. They join in, the man with the fire extinguisher, the man with an armoured truss, they're all in there.
We're certainly on different paths at the moment, but I will always be there for him, and as I know, he'll always be there for me. You know, we don't see each other as much as we used to, because we're so busy. But, you know, I love him dearly, and, you know, the majority of the stuff is probably, well, the majority of stuff is created out of nothing. But, you know, it's just, as I said, as brothers, you know, you have good days, you have bad days.
I really tried to adopt this British sensibility of a stiff upper lip.
It has its, you know, it has its advantages,
I guess.
I
really tried, but I think that what that does internally is probably really damaging. And the biggest thing that I know is that I never thought that this would be easy, but I thought it would be fair.
She says she met you in 2001. She says she dined with you, danced with you at Tramp nightclub in London. She went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell, your friend. Your response?
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady. None whatsoever. I've gone through this in my mind so many times. At the end of the day, with the benefit of all the hindsight that one could have, it was definitely the wrong thing to do. But at the time, I felt it was the honourable and right thing to do.
Am I right in thinking you threw a birthday party for Epstein's girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, at Sandringham?
No, it was a shooting weekend.
A shooting weekend.
Just a straightforward shooting weekend.
Is the monarchy fit for purpose, Jeremy Corbyn?
Needs a bit of improvement.
idea of a £30,000 limit being the sense of what skill base there is, I find absolutely flabbergasting. The only job I have ever had that paid me more than £30,000 is the one I'm doing right now. And that is not unusual for people who live where I live. It is not unusual for people in Birmingham Hall Green, Birmingham Yardley, Birmingham anywhere. And actually, I was considered to be skilled, to be high management in the jobs that I did before, and I didn't earn that much money. It has been pointed out that there needs to be a massive equality impact assessment of how this £30,000 is meted out, because obviously men earn more than women, and whether this is going to have a discriminatory effect on women workers must be pointed out, but also part-time workers. So is the £30,000 going to be prorated? So if you're actually only earning £5,000 but you were only working one day a week, that's £30,000. So how exactly is that going to work? And how is it going to be fair to women and people, just ordinary people, who the idea that they're not skilled, we have to be careful of this language, the idea that my constituents are not skilled because they don't earn over £30,000 is frankly insulting. It is insulting.
No-deal Brexit is genuinely a very bad outcome.
We have looked into the abyss when we have looked at a no-deal.
Just because we don't sign this particular deal doesn't mean to say we won't have any deal.
Could we survive no-deal?
It would be an utter and complete disaster.
Scientists almost entirely agree the last three decades have been successfully warmer at the Earth's surface than any since 1850. In the Northern Hemisphere, the last 30 years have been the warmest on record in the last 800 years. While there's evidence sea ice is increasing in some parts of Antarctica, it is decreasing in the Arctic at 4% per decade. During the summer months, that melting of the sea ice can increase over threefold. In terms of area, that's like losing the size of Japan, Vietnam, and Malaysia in ice every decade. Shrinking glaciers have also added to rising sea levels. That rise in the last century has been faster than during the previous two millennia. And while a 1.7 millimeter a year increase doesn't sound too bad, levels have risen nearly twice as fast in the last 20 years. The UN is even confident climate change is responsible for droughts, reduced crops, and the extinction of several species. This is mostly thanks to rapid industrialization. In just over 20 years, global greenhouse gas emissions have risen by over 40%. Back in 1990, the biggest offender was the USA, with nearly 17% of the world's emissions. China's dramatic ascent as a global power has seen it pinch the top spot, with 22% of the world's emissions. The Asian powerhouse gave the green light to 155 coal plants this year alone, despite overcapacity. With warnings of the planet facing irreversible damage, time is running out for the world's advanced nations to come to the most important agreement of our time.
Sir David Attenborough.
The nations got together, scientists got together and said, we need to know about the physical characteristics of this vast landmass. This living down there, researching down there, is quite hard enough for us to spend time in squabbling. Let us get together and make a treaty in which will be a series of idealistic commands. We will stop squabbling among ourselves of different nationalities. And what is more, this treaty, the international treaty, Polar-Antarctic Treaty, will have no stop end. It'll be go on for infinity, as far as we can. Marvellous ideals make the pulse quicken in this day of squabbling that we've got going on in the world today. But high ideals from explorers and scientists getting together. Would that there were international treaties like that elsewhere on this planet. Sadly, not so far. So it's nice to suppose that Antarctica is leading the way.
Cities across Europe are doing what they can to keep people cool and safe as temperatures keep climbing. One German couldn't take the unusually hot weather and was pulled over for riding naked on his moped.
From this vantage point, you get a sense of the scale of the disaster facing this region of the Amazon. Hectare after hectare of pristine forest just going up in smoke.
You can see where the fields start to get flooded, and a big pumping operation, as before, underway to try to reduce the levels of the water here.
We are less than 12 years away from not being able to undo our mistakes. In that time, unprecedented changes in all aspects of society needs to have taken place.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse.
Just in time for Vegan Mary, Greggs is releasing their very first vegan sausage rolls, and me, Sabrina, and Ben, we're going to be trying them.
Horse stock is attached, head is matted black, got the bushes black to match.
Greta, your first climate strike was a lonely event a little over a year ago. And in the intervening time, you have sparked the interest of millions, literally, of children around the globe, demanding action for climate change. What's your message to world leaders today?
My message is that we'll be watching you. The ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams, my childhood, with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering, people are dying, entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction. All you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away? And come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight. You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe.
Listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.